Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is July 15th, 2005. Today's session is entitled, If There Will Never Be Tomorrow, How Do We Stay in the Now? Presented by Kata Schwen. Disc number SCK-2005-05.
Kata Schwen and... Hi, Renita. You can join the inner circle if you want. Mike, oh wow! We're gonna have to at some point divide the conversation between those in the outer circle and those in the inner circle. Here, it's becoming kind of.
There's most people there. I'm always about to see kind of prisoner.
Well, luckily, the theme today, the poem is other, so you can, you know, there you go. So, I'm Kata, and when I'm not at Holden, I live in Iowa City and attend the writer's workshop there, and I'll be teaching creative writing there in the fall. Come join the circle, you guys. So to start out with here, I'll just kind of give a little bit of background on what we've been doing this week. We've been, besides yesterday was a little bit different. We went a little crazy with the surrealists yesterday and did some writing, and people were amazing and great and crazy. It was great. We're going to be a little bit more somber, a little bit more low-key today, and do what we've been doing kind of the other days, which is to really trying to get into a single poem, really root through and find out what's going on there, and then using that to sort of connect into sort of bigger and larger discussions about lives or other sessions. This one, I think, will connect well with what John's been doing about time, which he's had some wonderful sessions about that. So sort of making those connections. It's a Holden discussion, so everyone's viewpoint is welcome and encouraged. Please disagree and do so fiercely, but gently. And so I kind of will start out here by giving you a little bit of background and kind of trying to give you some questions that I'll re-ask at the end that we'll sort of come back to, so you can kind of have them in the back of your mind as we go through. First of all, the poet that we're dealing with is a woman named Jory Graham. Has anybody heard of her before? Anyone? Okay, no. She was born in the 1950s. I don't have her book with me right now, so I'm not sure the exact 1958, and she's still alive. She currently teaches at Harvard. She spent a lot of her time growing up in France, and then she also attended the Iowa Writers' Workshop and was kind of in charge of the poetry there for a while, though I haven't had her as a teacher at Iowa. She won the Pulitzer Prize for a collected book of her poems called Dream of the Unified Field. The book that Other comes out of is her newest book, and it's called Overlord. And it's probably one of her most accessible books that's come out for a while, and really interesting in a lot of ways. I would definitely recommend it. It deals, is it World War, oh, this is going to be terrible. World War I, I believe, is what she's dealing with. And so, but she moves from World War I then into a lot of current kind of social issues and personal ones too. There's always kind of that interaction in her poetry. She is labeled very much, and in the media she's often held up and criticized for being too academic, that some of her poetry is too obscure, too abstract, no one can understand it, that kind of thing. Whereas people who are in academia a lot of times uphold her as being brilliant and, oh, she's so smart. And so there's this kind of conflict that's going on. So as we go through this poem and as we reach the end, I'll be interested in what people have to say about that too. At the very beginning of the week, I sort of started out with one definition of poetry. We brainstormed a bunch of other ones, but that one of my teachers always said that a good poem that's written well should begin in the body and end in the body and make an arc through the mind. Meaning that poetry is first and foremost the beginning and the end, a felt experience, but that it should also somehow involve our intellectual faculties. It should also make us think as well as feel. But it's an interesting balance to try to strike. Okay, then on to this poem specifically. I think we'll probably have enough here. Do you want to start passing around? entitled Other, and I just wanted to put up some of the definitions here of Other that we can kind of get back to as we try to work our way through this. The first is being the one remaining or not included. Second, not the same, so different. And three, being additional, which are all seem similar but are mildly different in certain ways. The poem itself it's pretty long, and I think it is a difficult poem in a lot of ways. So I just want to put that out there right at the beginning. But I think it also, that there will be certain lines as we read through it that might jump out and speak to you. There might be moments that seem very clear, and then moments that are more contorted and more difficult. If you would like to have, I'll probably ask you right off the bat after we finish reading it, if there are certain lines that made sense to you or troubled you or anything like that. If people want, I'll just pass these around to you, like a writing utensil just to underline, that's great too. We'll all read through it once, and then as we go back and go through it, the poem sort of divides itself up in what I would call sort of three different sections. In the first, kind of most of the first page, she brings forth a sort of concept of the word now, and then there's a comparison about it. It's the now of her childhood versus the now of adulthood, what those two versions of the word now or the present moment sort of mean. There's a lot of other stuff going on there too, but that's one thing that's happening. In the second part of the poem, kind of the second page, she's going to give us a very specific experience from her childhood. And so we'll go through that more slowly, but sort of trying to pay attention to what exactly is that experience. And you should know as we go through, just so it's not confusing, when she was in the poem at least, she's called Jory Pepper rather than Jory Graham. Anyway. And then the last, maybe half a page or so, she comes to a conclusion. So we'll kind of go through exactly what that is. And from there, like, what is the problem that she's presenting? She presents it pretty clearly at the end. What's the problem? What's the issue? And then sort of the great question is, how do we solve it? Does she give us any solutions? What are our own solutions? Does the poem itself present a way to deal with the problem? Okay, so I think that's all we need for now. Are there any questions before we move through it? People have. Okay. So, other. For a long time, I used to love the word now. I murmured its tiniest of songs to myself as a child when alone. Now, 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 I sang, not much knowing where we were. Until, before I knew it, it put forth its liquid melody, and time, shimmering, began to flow nearly inaudible, alongside the crickets if it was summer, alongside the penumbral clock if it was the kitchen, alongside the tapping of the wintered lilacs branches on the violet-shadowed walls that held the garden if it was wind. Where were we, in fact? Now, now, the adults used to say, meaning pay attention, meaning the thing at hand, the crucial thing, has these slippery sides. This now, it's one slope. This now, it's other. The thing itself, the essential thing, is in between. Don't blink. Don't miss it. Pay attention. It's a bullet. All those years, before I became lost, I lived a different life, one where you can go back. I thought each new now, new note, plucked from the as yet unpronounced, covered up a footstep of the retreating God. Where was it just before, I wondered, as it moved away in concentric circles from the place the finger had triggered? Tap, tap, drummed my mother's hand without her knowing on the kitchen table in the dim end of afternoon. To keep away waiting. There is no waiting. There will never be tomorrow. Nonetheless, you do suddenly fall asleep, and then there it is again, when just as suddenly your eyes open, it floods in, and you are full, and the song begins. One day I woke up. I was sick, in bed, my first time, since beginning. since beginning school, since the becoming of myself. I looked for the notes, but walls slid in. A weight descended. I was waiting, the first time. What age could I have been? The house gave forth its ticking and tapping. One time sounds occurred. A shutter snapped. A heavy clink where keys were dropped. The sweet dry clack where a pine cone hits gravel below. A mourning dove. Once. Then after a while, again, once. What else could be inside me? That's when I heard what makes me break this silence and speak to you this way. I heard my name, as always, called out into the classroom as the school day began. Pepper, Jory. I sat up. I knew what space it floated into, everyone waiting. I heard it said the second time into the grayish morning light, over the rows and rows of chairs, the gleaming fullness of them, empty as children stood. There was nothing I could do. I saw it as I heard it. Absent, set out into the room. Heard the silence that followed it. Sitting up, I looked about. The tree beyond the window pane flowed out to its bark. It ticked out its being to its leaf tips, down into its roots. It could not be absent. The blue cup on the dresser, its tiny blue stream, crab apples in bloom, one bird sitting on the handrail of the bridge. What of it could ever retreat, leaving only part of itself present? Or the clouds on the cup in sky, or the tasseled fringe of curtain, door, wicker chair with rose-patterned pillow, saffron lampshade with cream-brocaded border. I don't know if I cried out, but they came running up to see what was wrong. This is what is wrong. We, only we, the humans, can retreat from ourselves and not be altogether here. We can be part full, only part, and not die. We can be in and out of here, now, at once, and not die. The little song, the little river, has banks. We can pull up and sit on the banks. We can pull back from the being of our bodies. We can live in a portion of them. We can be absent. No one can tell. Yeah, any initial thoughts, reactions?
I loved how it started. For me, she was describing the ever-present now of a toddler or a very young child, and then time began being marked by seasons. Like before the clock even took over, you started to get that feeling that time was going to change.
Mm-hmm. Great. Anybody else, just initial reactions or even lines you liked or lines that confused you or?
The line that stood out for me, I guess, is we can be absent and no one can tell. Because I, a lot of times, can even sit and look at somebody and not hear a word they're saying. I'm there, but I'm not there.
Yeah. For how many people have had that experience of sitting there and listening to somebody, right? Yeah. There's somebody who hasn't had that experience. Yeah. Why don't you come on up here? Yeah, right. And certainly in, you know, classrooms especially is a time that I think that happens. So really the experience of this poem itself for you might be just totally being absent the entire time we're talking. Okay, so Donna kind of started to mention this, but let's look a little bit at this first section here about, there's a lot dealing with time and this idea of now, right? What is this now to the child? What does that mean? And people can throw out lines, or they can throw out ideas or sense, or
each moment, moment by moment.
Moment by moment, great. So now to the child means moment by moment.
I think it's very sensory. She talks
great.
About tapping, shimmering, inaudible,
So each moment is very felt, too. It's not just marking, we're not just marking the passage of time in some way. We're feeling.
There is no time.
Okay. So no time in the sense of?
Or it's timeless, I guess you could say.
Okay.
Not old enough to really have a history. It's not like us, we look back quite a ways back and imagine the future. Well, because she's got a bunch of it.
So the sense of chronological, time being chronological.
Doesn't have that, yeah.
Okay. So
she doesn't seem to have a sense of self-reference, because it says not much knowing where we were.
Huh?
Just being and not a sense of self-consciousness. Where were we, in fact?
Yeah, and it's that's a great line to point out, because you get the we there, too. Who, and I, a lot of the questions that I'll be asking you about this poem are ones that I have no idea what the answer is. This poem especially, there's some places where I don't know. And so that we, definitely, what are possible? Who could possibly be the we? What are possibilities?
Because she uses adults in the next sentence, you wonder, is it the family?
The family. Okay, so the we could be the family. Who else could the we be?
Teachers.
Okay.
Just her different personality.
Okay.
Different.
So
selves.
Different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or the universal we. Where,
yep.
Were we all?
Yep. That we were maybe, not that none of us maybe at that time had that sense.
Could include the wind in the previous sentence too, I guess.
Great.
I like the, this now is one slope, and then it's other. The thing itself, the essential thing, is in between.
Mm-hmm. Whose version is that of now?
Well, she starts it with the adults.
Okay, yeah, so let's do, okay, so now this is, I'll put C here for child. Okay, what's now for the adults?
Pay attention.
Pay attention?
Yeah, and it's urgent. I hear come now with a
right.
sense of urgency or irritation that you're not here now where you're supposed to be.
Right. Great, so urgency.
I like that image of time being a bullet.
Yeah.
You know, like if you don't pay attention, it's gone.
Mm-hmm. So time is something that is almost this palpable thing that we're going to, that we have the capability to lose, and
yeah.
It's gone, never get it back.
It seems to me like that when the adults are saying it now is only a small part of your experience. And in the beginning, when it was the child's now, now is your whole experience.
Oh, yeah.
Now is your whole life.
Right.
So the adults are saying now, this part is important, which kind of implies there's all this other stuff out there that's not important, that's not part of this.
Mm-hmm.
Now.
So it's a limiting, whereas this one's more universal.
Yeah, I like that. It's a discriminating now. This now. The word bullet for me reminds me of being a child and daydreaming and having that sudden eruption of it. My experience, usually for a parent reprimanding me for something,
sure.
But being pulled quickly out of the reverie.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That it hits you like a bullet, like you're shocked.
Right. Yeah, it's like pay attention to what they want you to pay attention
yeah.
to,
not
okay.
what.
Mm-hmm. So it's very direct.
Yes, not what you may be. You know, you say you're daydreaming, but really, you're probably paying attention
I'm
to
absorbed.
The world
yeah, yeah.
around you.
Yeah.
yeah,
they would call it daydreaming.
But it's not in a way.
Yeah.
yeah.
I'm happy that they're not. that's
yeah,
not,
exactly.
That's the bullet
yeah.
I experienced.
They want you to focus your attention on something specific.
That's
mm-hmm.
important to them,
yeah.
not me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Great. And we begin with the line, for a long time I used to love the word now. How is that different than opening with, I love the word now? Yep. So by the first line, we know that we're dealing with a speaker that's gone through some sort of change, that there's two different states of consciousness that this speaker has experienced.
And right after that bullet, all those years before I became lost, like that's a marker.
Yep.
Like when someone else's now became more important than mine, I got lost.
And there was a sense of, great, I'm losing something. And somebody already brought up some of these sensory details, but let's just examine them a little bit more. Now, I'm saying, not much knowing where we were. Until, before I knew it, it put forth... Okay, so what's that it that we're going to get for the rest of the sentence? What's going to put forth its liquid melody?
Now.
Okay, so the song. So now, it put forth its liquid melody, and time, shimmering, so time is going to be what's that sense of now, began to flow nearly inaudible alongside the crickets if it was summer, alongside the penumbral clock if it was the kitchen, alongside the tapping of the wintered lilacs branches on the violet-shadowed walls that held the garden if it was wind. So time has the potential to be three different things in this. What? It's shimmering, right, and began to flow nearly inaudible alongside the crickets if it was summer. That's, at first we think, if it was summer, like, oh, if it was summertime, then it was flowing alongside the crickets. But then we get to alongside the penumbral clock, if it was the kitchen. So what's that it?
Now.
So if now was the kitchen. And so then we go back to the previous one. It's not just if it was summer, it's if the now was summer, right? Mm-hmm. Alongside the tapping of the wintered lilacs branches on the violet-shadowed walls that held the garden, if it was wind. So our three versions of now then that are sensory here are what?
Summer.
Uh-huh.
Kitchen.
Yep.
And she's presenting repeated sounds with each of those.
Yes.
So in the summer, there's the repeated sound of the crickets. And in the kitchen, there's the repeated sound of the ticking clock.
That's so great.
In the wind, there's the repeated sound of the lilacs branches. And then later on, there's sounds that only happen once.
Yes.
Sounds.
Yes, thank you. That's going to be a big line that she draws. And so that things that repeat, where do things that repeat keep us versus things that happen once? Going to be two different kind of versions of how we hear, how that brings us into our state of being. So we'll come back to that a little bit more towards the end, but thank you. And I love this word penumbral there, which, just in case, I put up a definition here that penumbra is a space of partial illumination, as in an eclipse between the perfect shadow on all sides and the full light, or like the fringe of something. So penumbral clock. What?
That's wild.
What would a penumbral clock be like or look like?
Maybe it's just sort of on the fringe of your experience in the kitchen.
Awesome.
Or it's just on the edge of your consciousness. Only if you're really quiet, you're going to hear that clock ticking.
Okay.
Even in an image of a clock, is no hands.
Yeah. So it could be both sort of having to do with sound and consciousness, or even just a visual image of how she's seeing the clock, or the way that shadows are falling on the clock, that it's only partially illuminated because of the time of day that it is, or and what in terms of just this sentence here, what seasons do we have represented?
Summer,
right. So in the course of a single line, we're moving from the the crickets in the summer to the wintered lilac branches on the violet shadowed walls.
And I don't know if I'm getting ahead of what we're trying to do here, but nearly inaudible. Mm-hmm. For me, time is this thing that wasn't there, and then you could barely hear it, and then it was loud, and now...
it's deadly for me. It's my enemy in a way. And it was a silent thing stalking almost, or maybe that's too strong a word, but
where it gradually snuck up on her.
Yeah, before we understood, you know, how time stretches on for a child for so long that she gets a little idea of waiting.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you get old, time is flying and you can't even catch it.
Yeah. Great. So then we get this, where were we in fact, which kind of echoes that not much knowing where we were at the beginning. Even though she's going to give us, she gives us then some specific places like the kitchen and the garden, but there's still that sense of sort of disorientation that's lingering with that. So then we get to the adults, the now, the adults used to say, meaning pay attention, meaning the thing at hand, the crucial thing has these slippery sides, this now on its one slope, this now its other, the thing itself, the essential thing is in between, don't blink, don't miss it, pay attention, it's a bullet. And this is the first time we encounter the word other. What are the, and this is a totally a question, I don't know, the thing at hand has these slippery sides. This now, it's one slope. This now, it's other. Are those the two different nows? Is that the same now, and it's just creating the sides of this slope? How do people see that?
I see that from a child's mind. Is adults had some kind of undecipherable code of what was now important, and then it was in something else a little bit later. Why is now that suddenly important?
So it's identifying with the child's sense of things shifting.
The bullet thing, that's almost like a warning. That's like, you know, pay attention.
Yeah.
Now, or there's like danger.
Yeah. And what, again, it keeps popping up in these places where sometimes it's, what is the it there? What's a bullet?
Whatever slope they're on.
Is it now, or is it, I mean, the previous thing that we refer to, right, is the essential thing.
That thing, that intrigues me, that line.
The thing itself, the essential thing?
Is in between.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because visually we have the now, there are these slopes, right? The now on one side and the now on the other, and then the essential thing.
Yeah, you know, interestingly enough, I visualized that the opposite way that you did. I visualized it like a thin precipice at the top, and the now's being...
Okay, I saw it too. Yeah. Oh, interesting. So,
you know, I just thought that was really interesting that you... Yeah, that's wild. Okay.
Oh, wow. So, and then the essential thing is here.
Or on the point, actually.
Okay.
Or where, where you've got it pointed toward. It goes either way.
Yeah.
How interesting. Did most people see it? Tell me your name again.
Irene.
Did most people see it Irene's way? Interesting. That's so funny.
Saw it that first way, but
you saw it the first, but it could be
either
way, right?
I'm just fascinated by that.
That's interesting.
How people visualize things.
Yeah. Okay. And again, all those years before I became lost, I lived a different life, one where you can go back. I thought each new now, new note, plucked from the as-yet unpronounced, covered up a footstep of the retreating god. It's pretty... Somebody say something about that.
Huh?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Are we in the surrealistic part?
Right. Yeah, we've gone back. Right.
Yeah.
How do you feel when you read that? Covered up a footstep of the retreating god.
It's like each moment God has just been there.
Yeah.
God is just here.
Yeah.
You just missed it?
Yeah.
I feel like when I'm dropping something, I'm very clumsy, so I drop a lot of things, and I'm continually trying to catch it on the way down, but I often don't.
But that you're always sort of in the presence, but you're kind of in the presence of God, but not quite. Like you're almost there, you're almost like that sense.
But is it a sense of the now's the each new now is getting in the way of catching up to God in
okay.
a sense, you know?
Is it preventing it, or is it keeping you on the path towards?
Yeah.
When she had a sense of... That's it when she was before she became lost.
What's with the pluck? Mm-hmm. The note, the fact that it's referred to as a note, a musical note.
Yeah, maybe. When did we get song before?
Yeah.
The tiny sort of
yeah.
song.
Her retreating really shows movement. Mm-hmm. It's not staying in the now. It's not staying in one place. It's going somewhere else.
Yep.
Where do you know what you're going to say?
When she had a sense of openness, the time didn't have the valley walls, she had access to God.
Okay.
Before I became lost, it seemed like she is lost being without God.
Okay, so that this now also has to do with a relationship with God.
Yeah. When when it was replaced with chronological time, it was a way of always pushing God out of the picture.
Okay, so this time pushes God out.
It's really interesting to me. It seemed like when I was reading it, it didn't sound nearly so much like you're losing God, but more like God had just been here engineering something for you. Like, oh look, another moment that God just
right.
made. Oh look, another one. Like, because she had just said, before I became lost, this was my life, before
mm-hmm.
I was lost. I can, one where you can go back, and each now, each new note in this song that I'm singing, now, each new now is another moment where God has just been. So
yep.
there's this idea of like, every moment that I've been in, God was just here. And
yeah.
not, I don't know, it doesn't feel to me so much like chasing and missing something, but just like discovering another one over and over of this. Right here.
And
yeah.
like God's one step ahead of us.
Yeah.
We're always right there, but
yeah.
close.
That does, your thought does tie it back to the beginning of the poem, too. The now,
mm-hmm.
you know, the each note, the,
yeah.
you know, I like that.
Yeah. And I think with Renita's, you know, that following those footsteps is a direct way of being in relationship with God, though not the relationship that we normally think of, but being sort of getting to follow.
But it says covered up. I'm not quite sure how you get follow up. If something is covered up, it seems like it's obscured
okay.
and concealed rather than revealed. So
okay.
if it's concealed, it's kind of hard to follow.
Okay. Anybody want to respond to that?
I think that there's, for me, the essential thing is the in-between, and that it connects to that, and that it's not what you're looking for. It's not the Buddhists, when they do their om, their meditation, it's made up of four distinct sounds, the ah, ooh, mm, and then the silence. And the silence, I think, is the covered up footsteps of a retreating God.
Okay.
And it's that thing that you don't, it's not the positive thing that we're looking for, but it's the space in between.
Okay. That silence in between, that's a great way to look at it. So, and back to what Michael's saying too, that the covering up a footstep of the retreating God, that at the very least there's an attempt to sort of obscure that maybe God is present, but there's something that's trying to prevent us from realizing that presence. Would that be fair to say that the presence might be there, that we might be experiencing that, but that it's being, or am I?
We can never get there.
Yeah,
that's
or maybe to be, maybe this is the academic side of things, that reveal, as things are revealed, whatever is revealed is also concealed.
Okay.
Right, that's kind of the other. So, you know, the other side of something, if I show you one side, the other side is concealed, so that
okay.
revealing, concealing.
Okay, so going back to the notion of the other, of the great.
Or are you, it's almost like whether you're a pessimist or an optimist, like, God is always elusive, but is that a negative thing, or just a positive thing, or are we living in a positive mystery, or is this kind of like, damn, I missed him again.
Right. Yeah. John.
Well, I feel like something happens here, like the awareness of death.
Okay.
That and either it's the sickness and the mother worried at the table, and that this changes everything, because
Okay.
And a different meaning than it does before. And especially when she comes and says, you know, we only humans can not be all together here. We can be part, you know, it's only humans who can be aware of that, that things are really temporal.
Death, finality.
She's sick, and maybe she's very sick.
Okay.
And her mother's worried, or maybe somebody, anything else.
Okay. Well, yeah, let's get into the mother here. Where was it just before, I wondered, as it moved away in concentric circles from the place the finger had triggered. Tap, tap drummed my mother's hand without her knowing on the kitchen table in the dim end of afternoon to keep away waiting. There is no waiting. There will never be tomorrow. Nonetheless, you do suddenly fall asleep, and then there it is again. When just as suddenly your eyes open, it floods in and you are full and the song begins. What does she mean by there will never be tomorrow?
Janis Joplin, on the train, tomorrow never comes.
Go ahead.
It's always today.
Yeah, yeah. It's always the same effing day.
Right.
What she says on the song when I read it. No, but it's like if you have it today, you don't wear it tomorrow. That's what she says. It's being present to the now.
Because we're always in it. We never reach that place.
Yes.
Right. And how about the mother? What's...
I think that the mother probably understands a bit more about tomorrow than the child does in this section. That, like, I think when you're little, it does feel like tomorrow's not really real. You know, it's kind of exists once you sort of get to know what time is like. But in a lot of ways, there's, like, today is your whole experience of the world, and tomorrow is so far away that you can't even imagine it. And so then, like, for all intents and purposes, there is no tomorrow. But the mother... There is tomorrow, and there's the day after that, and you have to plan for them, and you have to act today to set things up for the future, and it kind of changes your experience of time.
So tomorrow exists for the mother in a way that it doesn't.
Yeah. And I think when you were little, they're really, like, very small. There's not a lot of experience of waiting, either. What
right.
are you waiting for? Because now is your whole life.
Great. So what is... waiting depend on what to be in a place where you're like I'm waiting for something. What does your sense of time have to be? Does it have to contain
future?
Right. Whereas with the child, there's no waiting because there's not the future. So
I think that's the function of Christmas. It teaches children that you have to wait.
Michael loves Christmas. He can talk more about that sometime.
Christmas is cruel.
Okay, well, so this is where I would say is the end of sort of our first part of the poem. Do you guys feel like we have a pretty good, I mean, obviously there's a lot of confusing things going on. Does everybody kind of have at least a decent sense of the two ideas of time that have kind of been drawn out here? Is that...
Yeah.
Okay. So let's move on to this one day. One day I woke up, I was sick, in bed, my first time since beginning school, since the becoming of myself. Wow, that's pretty heavy. So what is since the becoming of myself?
One thing that interests me is that I know that small children don't use the word I until they're about 3 years old.
Okay.
There's a revelation. There's no concept of self. And then she woke up, and she started to realize these concepts of I and now and the rest of her existence.
So there's a concept of I or the self. So there's that concept of the self. Are there any other concepts of self that when you read becoming of myself, or was there a moment, I think the kind of broader question, is there a moment for anyone here that you would pick out as a time where you felt like you had become yourself in a way that there, it seems like she's trying to draw a pretty specific line here.
starting school kind of does make you become yourself, because you have to be removed from your parents for some amount of time that you probably haven't had that as a consistent part of your life before.
Okay.
So now you're figuring out, who am I if I'm not a part of my mother or my father?
And distinguishing yourself from peers.
Yeah.
How am I different from this person?
So that part of the becoming of the self is having to be in a position where you have to distinguish yourself from others. You're in relationship.
And I think that threefold use of since is incorrect. Since beginning school, since the becoming of myself.
But there's been a passage of a significant passage of time between this moment and. Okay, so we have the so. That being said, what are the periods of development that we've witnessed so far in the poem then? We have the, if Michael's right here, and I think so, in the emphasis on since beginning school, since the becoming of myself, we have the becoming of the self moment must be in here. This is taking place in school a little bit later on in the since sort of time. And then what's back here? What?
Where you came from, the child singing now.
The now, okay.
Life is now.
The song, the now. Is that
there's
of,
also an in there's kind of an in-between point, too,
okay.
I think, where she's, and I don't know if you use the word, half in her childhood and half starting to become aware of the time, you know, kind of in that, oh, where she starts to realize maybe what the adults are talking about, but she still can go back to the now at that point. She still has that ability then.
Okay.
She actually says that.
She says that in
one
there.
Where you can go back.
One where you can go back.
Okay, so there's sort of, in here is this sort of a realization of what the adult's kind of view is in there, and then
you're not quite,
there's the becoming of the self, which we don't get to really witness necessarily in the poem. We're not really sure exactly what that contains, and then as Michael's saying, then we're all of a sudden put in a place where that happened, and now here's the moment we're talking about. So the self has become, but there's something else here that hasn't quite
gelled.
Thank you. So we're going to have another moment. I looked for the notes, but walls slid in. A weight descended. I was waiting the first time. So what is this experience going to be about? What's all of a sudden shifted?
She's waiting for the future. She's not in the now anymore.
Okay, so this moment is about a shift from one now to the other. Okay, that's this moment, her being sick in bed is about that shifting for her. Okay, so let's see what happens. What age could I have been? The house gave forth its ticking and tapping. One time sounds occurred. A shutter snapped. A heavy clink where keys were dropped. The sweet dry clap where a pine cone hits gravel below, a mourning dove, once. Then after a while, again, once. What else could be inside me? So kind of back, is it Kelly inside?
Yeah.
So say again kind of what you were saying about the, because we're getting the once here again.
Just you see the comparison between the sounds of when you have that now song going on, that these repetitive sounds, the crickets and clock ticking and the tapping branches on the window, and now one-time sounds. You're hearing these one-time sounds as you're waiting.
Okay. Anybody
the shutter snaps, but only once. The keys are dropped, but only once. The pine cone falls, but only one pine cone.
And do people see why it is that those once experiences would contribute to a more adult version of time as being, as having a future, as progressing in this chronological way, in this sense of urgency. How would once things contribute to that as opposed to repetitive ones?
They have an end.
They have an end, yeah.
There's the same sense in the beginning they were saying that the adult now is that bullet. It's the same piece, like you could miss it. It would be gone.
Could miss it, okay. So the experience is singular rather than continuous. Okay, does anybody else want to say anything about that section? Okay, that's when I heard what makes me break this silence and speak to you this way. I heard my name as always called out into the classroom as the school day began. Pepper, Jory, I sat up. I knew what space it floated into, everyone waiting. I heard it said the second time into the grayish morning light over the rows and rows of chairs, the gleaming fullness of them, empty as children stood. There was nothing I could do. I saw it as I heard it, absent, set out into the room, heard the silence that followed it. So what happens? What's her experience? Where is she?
She's home in bed.
She's home in bed.
But her mind is at
school. And her mind is where?
At school.
At school, okay.
So the vision between... She has a surreal moment.
She has a surreal moment, okay. So it's sort of a moment of separation of the body and mind, that your body could be in one... Her kind of first experience of the body's in one place, but my mind is in another. And what does she see happening in the schoolroom? Rolls being called, right? And what are all the students? Are they sitting down or standing up? Standing up, so we see this emptiness of chairs, right? And then what happens?
They call her name and she's not there.
She's not there. And so what word does she hear?
Absent.
She's declared absent.
See, I didn't get that. I thought she was at school and so far into daydreaming now that they called her name and she didn't answer.
She didn't answer.
So they marked her absent even though she was there and she was so unable to come into the now because she was someplace else.
I think that would certainly be an interpretation that would definitely fit with the sort of things we've been talking about for sure, except for the fact that this experience makes her cry out of hearing this. We go back to, I cried out and people came running to see me. So I think it is an imagined one. But John, go ahead.
Well, and she follows it with things like the blue cup on the dresser. And
right.
Things, so that's
so we're great. Back to the house. Right. Thanks. Yeah.
It seems like she is longing to be there in the gleaming fullness of the at first full chairs. I mean, those are real.
So long. There's longing caught up in this. Longing and waiting.
And when I read the sentence, then after a while, again, once, I suffer from severe migraines. And when I'm so sick like that, I can't join in. I must be absent. I long to be present. I feel like I'm missing whatever's going on. And the child part of me for years thought, well, this I'm sick now, but then and then it's over. There's a sort of a euphoria. But then when I'm sick again, it's like again, once again. And there's almost a childlike denial that it's going to happen again. Mm-hmm. I mean, now it's happened so much, I can't.
Yeah.
But I...
And you want a different now.
Yeah. And you want it to be this only a one-time thing. You don't want the repetition, but it's going to... After a while, you can't stay in denial.
That's great. So that the physical sensation of being sick itself calls on us to want to understand a different concept of time.
Yeah. And time goes on rubber bands, that when you're having a good time, it goes fast. And when you're sick, it goes really slowly.
Okay. All right, we're going to keep going again. We're now running close. Okay.
We're going to get there.
It's driving me crazy every time. All right. So, heard the silence that followed it. Sitting up, and we're sitting up where now? At home, right?
Mm-hmm.
I looked about, and the tree beyond the window pane flowed out to its bark. It ticked out its being to its leaf tips, down into its roots. It could not be absent. So what's the difference immediately there between her and the tree? Right, it's rooted where it is. But
it isn't self-conscious.
It's not self-conscious.
So, consciousness versus what's the opposite of consciousness being?
Embodiment.
Unconscious, I guess.
Yeah.
Sort of.
No conscious.
Which kind of implies that the tree is.
Right, I know.
That float out to its bark is very interesting because it's a moving, the word implies movement, but a tree is stationary, so there's something going on there.
Unconscious, but very alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that it's in every part of itself.
Mm-hmm.
There's
that's good.
All the way out to the edge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then we get the blue cup on the dresser, its tiny blue stream, crab apples in bloom. One bird sitting on the handrail of the bridge. What of it could ever retreat, leaving only part of itself present? Or the clouds on cup in sky, so we get both the clouds that, you know, are on the physical reality there and outside the window, or the tasseled fringe of curtain, door, wicker chair with rose pattern pillow, saffron lamp shade with cream brocaded border. I don't know if I cried out, but they came running up to see what was wrong. Okay, so she's looking around and noticing, right, just like with the tree, that all of these things have their own presence, whereas she has just witnessed her absence, and so she cries out. They came running to see what's wrong. This is what is wrong. We, only we, the humans, can retreat from ourselves and not be all together here. We can be part full, only part, and not die. We can be in and out of here, now, at once, and not die. The little song, so what are we back to? What's the little song?
Now.
The little song, the little river has banks. We can pull up and sit on the banks. We can pull back from the being of our bodies. We can live in a portion of them. We can be absent. No one can tell. So what's the problem? So, I mean, she says it in this last part. Can somebody summarize kind of what's the problem with human beings?
You go through the motion of being ourselves, being whole, but really there's an emptiness that's in there.
Great. So our body can be present and our mind can be elsewhere, or our spirit can be elsewhere. So my two questions to you are, one, which I think is an important one to ask, because I feel like in this poem it has a negative connotation, right? This is what's wrong. We have this ability to not be fully present. Are there any times that you can think of in your life where it was good to be able to do that? That it was a good protective mechanism? Or that something positive came out of the fact that you were able to be mentally or spiritually absent from your body? Does anybody have an example?
Only the first 18 years of my life.
Really?
But other than that, no worse.
Okay. Do you want to say?
I just grew up in a very rough situation. And so being able to go into what I would now call willful denial and split off like that was a very useful thing to be able to do.
Okay. Anybody else?
I was thinking of it at the dentist when I started getting really
anxious.
I need to get something to my mind to go away from.
Yes. So, moments of physical or emotional pain, right?
Mm-hmm.
else have other times?
Well, I'm going to be very mundane about this because they almost all the time, because we have some sense of future.
Okay.
And we're always kind of, I mean, on the one hand, yes, we're present, but we're all, I think, some sense that capacity to always transcend any present moment and the future and imagine, you know, tomorrow I'm going to go on a hike, or tomorrow will be better, or maybe tomorrow will be worse. I mean, it can be both a positive and negative, but I think we're always.
So we're always there, but
there's always a future moment.
Are there hopeful things about always being in the future? I mean, are there what's good about being in the future?
Things will be alive. Yeah.
Keeps you alive. So there's a sense of like hope
you
in that.
Thinking about future to some extent, you won't plan to have food.
So it equals survival,
mm-hmm.
hope, so that if today is really, really an awful, awful day, if you have a sense that there might be another day tomorrow, that you're maybe not going to be as less likely to go slit your wrists, right? I mean,
every time we can pull out of life and rest a bit, sleep or take
okay,
a
so it can be rest.
And the hypnotherapists say that every 90 minutes we go into a small, light trance of self-hypnosis. We just space out that we need those mental rests, those absences, if you will.
Okay, great. So sometimes it is necessary, that pulling back, but would people also agree that there are times, or we are sometimes all guilty of pulling back too much at times when we maybe should have remained present?
Mm-hmm.
Is that so? Then the question becomes: How do we trick ourselves, get ourselves, practice? What are practices? What can we do to be more present at times? And I'm not saying like how could we get ourselves to be more present at the dentist, because that's. No, but
isn't that the function of prayer and meditation?
Okay, prayer.
To bring us to that now, back to the song of now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so prayer is one way. What else?
Consciousness.
How do you trick yourself into consciousness?
Oh, well, I could do it, but
okay.
The Zen master slapping
something. Slapping? Okay.
So we're talking in circles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't take it personally.
Like exercise. I mean, you do yoga or you walk, walking meditation or stretching.
Certainly these physical things bring us back to our bodies for sure. What other ways besides prayer can we?
I use art and creativity.
Art, okay. Why art? What does art do?
Well, art is my form of meditation, and it brings me to the present moment, and everything else disappears and puts me back into that eternal now that children need.
Okay. So art, I think a lot of times makes us pay attention. It's hard to create art, certainly, if you're not paying attention to what you're doing, and it's hard to really get into understanding a poem like this one, I think everyone can argue, if you're not paying attention to some degree about really what's going on within it, otherwise, you know, it doesn't work.
If you're really paying attention to the poem, to the painting, or what... You're not very present to yourself, are you? I mean, you've kind of immersed yourself into that other world.
Okay. So what are the types of presence that we're talking about?
Yeah.
And if you follow anything far enough around the circle, you'll go back to where you came.
Okay. So there's presence to our bodies. There's presence to the surrounding world.
If you stay in an art project long enough, you will once again be absent, in a way.
Okay.
Because you'll be so spaced out.
So what would you call that being present to? the mind, I mean.
I was going to say, because to me it's like it opens up your mind where you do things come in that you maybe wouldn't let in otherwise. Or
maybe
wouldn't
the,
listen to.
Heart,
maybe the subconscious could be.
Okay. And I would argue that I think all of these kinds of presence are good. I think there's a kind of absence that, you know, like in my family, we call, you know, like spacing out or being like, I mean, you know, we, whenever my dad comes home from work and all three of us are like sitting on the couch watching TV, he's like, oh, it's the zombie thing, right? That you like get into this process where you're not, I don't think you're probably present to any of these things, right?
Yeah.
Like that there is a certain kind of
an emptiness,
yeah, that, or no. You're in a conversation with somebody and they're talking and you're not really listening to them and you really are completely not being present with anything. But I think it is a good question to, that Michael's bringing up about what kind of presence are we meaning here, and if we get into one, what other one are we lacking? But we're totally out of time. And thank you everyone for coming and sharing, and if anyone wants to talk further or about anything else, I'm around and love to hear your thoughts.
Thank you.